This workshop is entitled Structure for the Unstructured. And before I begin, I should say I was challenged. I was really challenged by what Glendon Strickler had to share with us. And, you know, so often our church has been going through some changes, and some of them have been good and some of them have not been so good. And I sometimes think, you know, I'm afraid that too many of us do not look down the road and say, where is this going to take us? Where are we going to be in 10 years, 15 years from now? Because I think when we do that, we lose our vision. And when the people don't have a vision of what's going to happen, it's dangerous. It really is. But that's not what we're here for today. We're here to talk about structure for the unstructured. And let me tell you, I enjoy a good pun. Isn't this fitting? My daughter had a baby last Monday, and so we were in North Carolina for the weekend, and to visit them. And of course, Grandma stayed there, so I was back home on Sunday evening, and my two daughters are at home. And so as I was getting things ready to come here, I knew that I needed two sheets for a bunk bed. And so I asked my daughter where in the linen closet the sheets are for a bunk bed, and she told me those right there. So I pulled a sheet out, put it in my bag, and then I pulled the other sheet out, and I thought, now I need a fitted sheet. So I checked, and no, that wasn't one. So I put it back, got another one, a fitted sheet, and I put it in the bag. Last evening when I got here, I pulled out my sheet, and it was a fitted sheet, so I put it on the mattress, and I pulled out the other sheet, and it was fitted also. So now, isn't that interesting? Isn't it scary when someone who started their week off in that way is talking to you about being structured, being organized? First of all, I need to tell you that I've seen some students come into my classroom that are just organized. They know where everything is. They even remember where last year's seat was. They've got a time and a place for everything. I am not that person. As a matter of fact, I struggle with organization. I have had to work to become structured. And a couple years ago, the high schoolers were talking about things that they remember about school. And I have a desk in my classroom, and I also have a table in my classroom. And unfortunately, I get busy in the daytime. And I am not one of those people that is really organized. So what happens, the book I just worked with, it goes on the desk instead of back in the bookcase. And consequently, at the end of the day, my desk looks a fright. And the students said one of the things they remember about my classroom was the way my table always looked, which is not a good thing, but it's me. And so there I am. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that some of our students come from homes where there's a time and a place for everything, and that's the way the home operates. And unfortunately, there are homes where, wherever you put it is the place that it will be. And some children grow up with that setting. Someone asked me this morning, well, how important is it for students to be structured, to be organized? And I've used this example with a student before. I said, you know, if I don't pay my credit card bill on time, is it okay if I'm unstructured with a credit card company? Well, sure it is. They just charge me $39 extra for a late fee. But they're going to say, you need to be structured. And in the same way, I have found that if my classroom has at least a reasonable amount of structure, then that whole classroom operates better. more efficiently. And the other thing is that you as a structured teacher might very well be the pattern for this child in years to come. Let's talk about the value of structure in the classroom. First of all, there's an efficiency. And how many of you always have enough time to complete in a day what you want to do? I don't. And often I end up with oh, we didn't have time for that, or I forgot to do this, or a student reminds me, we didn't pass back the social studies test from yesterday. That type of thing. So being efficient and wisely using the amounts of time that I have in the classroom, the short time that I have in the classroom is really important to me, and so it's always important that I use it wisely. God's pattern. Wow, you look at the universe, how can the meteorologist tell you at what time the sun was going to rise this morning? Well, it's because God's orderly. It's not that man is so orderly. They have just detected what God's pattern is. But God, in throughout the universe, he is so orderly. Now, there are, of course, instances where things happen. Take an earthquake, take a flood, take an eclipse. But even those, even the eclipses can be predicted because God is so predictable. Your consistency in the classroom is going to be the way that patterns are made. And this is interesting because some people don't function doing the same thing day after day after day after day. And yet there are other students who don't function until they have created a rut. And it's in that wagon track rut that they find security. And they find their own efficiency because they know exactly what to do. I believe that consistency or structure enhances learning. And because when we have a structure, then we don't have to focus on, well, what are we going to do next? So on and so forth. But we can spend our time on the academics. I believe it teaches responsibility because with structure, there are always consequences for lack of structure, and because of that, we know that this gets practical for us. But there's a time and a place to do everything. Eliminates a lot of questions because students 6 weeks into the school year, they know what to expect. They know what, for the most part. You should always spring a few surprises, but for the most part, they know what's going to happen that way. And of course, it's going to help your students for 20 years down the road when they might be filling your spot in the classroom. The lack of structure wastes time, and I'm going to say it goes down to selfishness, because a lack of structure happens when you say, I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it. And that is, the root issue there is selfishness, of course, selfishness. And the other thing, I have seen so many times when a student, they didn't plan ahead, they decided to do their homework at the last minute, they didn't get finished on time, and it sabotages their self-worth. I have seen students that were like, oh, you know, I just wish I could hit undo and go back. And I wish I had done this last evening. Those are a lot of things that happen with students. And hopefully the student will benefit from that time and say, you know, what can I do the next time to avoid the consequence that I'm in or the situation that I'm in? And it also, structure avoids incomplete or tardy work. I would mention to you, we have a smaller group here today, and that's perfectly fine with me. I deal better with a group this size than with a big one. But this, we're going to get into some practical aspects of structure, and I would love to have your input. Maybe there are things that you are doing in your classroom that you would like to share with others. Be glad to have those. So, do this. Don't wait till I'm done. Go ahead and interrupt me at any time. I'm not offended, because I also realize that probably by the time that, if you wait until I'm finished, you might have forgotten, and we're going to move on to something else. So go ahead and interrupt me. That's perfectly fine. When I, the first year I taught, I came in as a public school product. I had never attended private school. And what happened was our fifth and sixth grade teacher had been in an accident, and she was supposed to, because of pressure being put on her brainstem, she was supposed to be going into the hospital for a week. I had been coaching my eighth grade sister, who was in a very large class. And so when the fifth and sixth grade teacher needed a sub for a week, the eighth grade teachers gave my name as a suggestion, and so I was asked to come teach for 1 week. And I came, first of all, on a Friday to watch the classroom teacher, because I had never attended a private school. And I will say that there were some things that were very different from the private school than compared to the public school. But I observed for 1 day, and on Monday morning, I was thrown into the classroom, and with approximately 25 students in two grades. And needless to say, I did a lot of learning in that week. Well, that week turned into 6 weeks, at which time I went off to Bible school, and another teacher finished out the school year. But when I told those students to switch papers to grade, I was amazed, because this guy in the front row goes up to his buddy in the back row, and they switch papers. And first of all, I don't necessarily try to keep a student from switching papers with their friend. But I also know that leniency in grading might happen, unwanted leniency in grading might happen if they're switching papers with their best friend. The other thing is just the time factor. So at the beginning of the year, this person in this desk always switches with this person in this desk. And I found that if they switch with the person behind and in front, that works better than switching with someone beside you. Because as you're grading, it's pretty easy to do this, to see what Joe is doing with my paper, where it's much more difficult if Joe is sitting behind me. And then when we grade, usually I tell them that I don't want to take questions while we are grading until later. And the reason is we just really tend to lose momentum. And then the people who were with me, who had no questions, after I get done answering this question, their mind is off. And so I have to work to draw everybody back before we go on grading. When we're grading, obviously on a lesson of this nature, some of these answers are going to be very easy to grade. And what I tell them, let's say number five, if you have a question, instead of you stopping, and usually if a student raises their hand, I'll say, I'll answer it later. And what I, the first 6 weeks, I work a lot with, you do that. You mark it somehow so you know which one it was that you had a question on, so that when I come back at the end of grading, you'll know where to, which question that you had. And then also, especially on a Bible lesson, sometimes on social studies or science, you're going to have a difficult time and to grade this one in class. And so what I've often done is said, okay, the answer to number, whichever one, number 10. Number 10 is worth 4 points. Cain is one of the answers, and he worked in the fields, and Abel is the other, is the third answer, and he took care of the sheep. Now, if you have any, if you feel that you have the correct answer, fine, just leave it. If you have any questions, rather than me trying to answer all your questions, you just go ahead and you circle number 9. And sometimes if it's a difficult question, like I remember one Bible lesson, who had the bigger problem, the older or the younger brother of the two, the prodigal son story? You know, that's a real toss-up. That's a matter of opinion. And if a student gives me any reasonable answer, I'm going to give them credit. So I want to grade that number myself. So everybody circle number 17. And then when I go to grade those papers, I know exactly which ones, when I collect, after I've collected the papers, I know exactly which ones I need to grade. And if I don't, I really make it a priority to grade every evening the papers that I have that evening. I know of a teacher who had a sideline job, and that's not all bad because some of us need that to supplement our salaries. But his was consuming enough that he stashed stacks of papers until Saturday. And then he and his wife plowed. That is a degrading thought to me. it's a disheartening thought to me to sit down on Saturday and expect to grade stacks of papers. Don't do it. Stay current. Furthermore, if Joe is having a problem, it shows up long before a week has passed. But I can come back 2 days later and I know exactly which ones I need to grade. That has been really helpful to me. And even with this paper, when we are done grading, we will always put the number wrong at the top, even if it's not finished grading. That way, I know, okay, I know that I'm going to need to grade this problem. And if he missed that, it's going to be -4. If he didn't, it's -3. And I really don't need to spend much time looking elsewhere for check marks. So I always want them to put a number wrong at the top of the paper. Also, train your students to move with you as you grade. And when I grade speed quizzes in math speed quizzes in class, our speed quizzes have 100 problems on them. We really don't want to spend 8 minutes grading that thing. So as I'm expecting, I don't require this, but I'm expecting, I always hear some of it, that pen clicks on the paper as I'm going, as I'm reading. Because the I have here, avoid excessive speed or grading too slowly. I've obviously found that excessive speed is going to be inaccurate grading. But I've also found that grading too slowly lets minds wander. And because of that, it's difficult. It's easy for the students to overlook this wrong answer. While I'm thinking about this, I have to tell you what I did a couple years ago in grading. I had a class. There were probably about 12 students in this class, and it seemed that every morning we graded a math lesson. People were not grading accurately, and I was kind of my wit's end. I understand they're not perfect. Neither am I. But I felt like surely we can do a little better than what is happening right now. So what I did is problem number one is 537. And I had them echo me on every answer. And so let's practice it. Number one is 537. And that's what I wanted them to do. And it did not take care of all of our problems, but it helped. And so I'm going to say also, you know, be creative in the things that you do and try something new. And don't set anything in concrete because you might want to change it tomorrow. Yes? What do you do? Okay, the question's raised. What do I do with, I have a large class and ADD, ADHD, as far as geniuses in there. How do I grade in class? Maybe I'll throw that question out to you first. Do you have thoughts? Go ahead.
So I have grades 8, 9, and 10, and I do some work. I allow them to grade their own paper and then hand it in. And then there's a few that struggle and take homework home every day. and I make arrangements with them, they can get, okay, there's two boys that really struggle. They can get one of their faster co-students to grade their paper. Faster ones that kind of learn to enjoy helping out. Something they can do for the slow student. Take their math paper over, go through grade, put the question mark on it, and I get it at the end of the day and I look over it. And that way I avoid the stall class time.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes more work for me afterward because I have to look over them to keep them honest and to keep them. But it doesn't take real much time. They never know how close I look at every paper, and so some days you can look really close, some days you're in a little hurry. But that, in that way, some of my faster ones have helped. Some that have needed all their time on their lessons and have freed up some of my time to do board work in class and let the grading
And here's something that was pointed out this morning about in teaching your academics, make sure that you teach what was stated, character. What you're doing right there is teaching a concept of the body of Christ. Having someone who is more capable helping someone who is less capable. Because all of us are going to find ourselves more adept at certain things and less so in other areas. Another thing I've often done is when I do a seating arrangement is put the poor student beside the better student so they will switch grades, so they will switch papers. Because hopefully the good student will catch all of the poor student's problems, which there are going to be more of, and that good student is going to have fewer wrong, and the poor student won't have to catch as many. Another thing I've done is, it's kind of unknown that in your classroom, these people right here are going to get the ones that benefit most from your teaching. The ones that sit on the fringes don't. And it's nice to have Susie here with a problem where you can observe as you are reading answers. You can kind of see upside down what's happening on that paper. And just really doing some monitoring, sometimes having to slow down. I had a student like that for 2 years. This little guy was a genius. But he reminded me a little bit of what I've heard concerning Albert Einstein, that his teacher, Albert Einstein, the genius he was, couldn't live daily life without help. And his teacher said, Albert, du bist Einstein. You are a rock. But when it came to practical everyday living, the poor guy didn't have it. And that's a little bit the way this student was that I had. That he had the wildest imagination. He could write vivid stories. But when it came to knowing how to get this done in time or to just find his red pen, it was a nightmare. And, you know, many is the time that we went back, pulled everything out of the desk and found that, remember, the rule, no loose papers. One that I often get is, I can't find my red pen. Well, rather than stopping the whole class at that point and to dig out their desk, I say, grab your blue one. Because every student of mine needs a blue pen and a red pen. And so what you do is you grab your blue pen until a time when you can find the red pen. So, and if you can't find your red, I've got an extra one, I'll give it to you. But I would like them, and when it comes to cleaning out a student's desk to find the paper, when they say, I can't find my paper, I do not immediately jump to their aid. Now, I teach grades 5 and 6. It might be different if I were teaching 1st and 2nd. But I do not immediately jump to their aid. Why? Because, number one, they lost the paper, I didn't. Number two, I want them to attempt to fix the problem themselves, if at all possible. If they have looked in their desk for a minute, which if everybody else is waiting, a minute is a long time, I'll go back and we will just start pulling things out of that desk. And usually we can find it. But so it is. Let's talk about assignments. I have a posted schedule on the board, or on the wall. And that's something that I would really recommend for any and all teachers, is that you post the schedule. This is really important the first 6 weeks of school. Our first week of school, we come in on a Tuesday, and we have a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and the next Monday is Labor Day. And so we have 2 weeks where things are just not quite following that schedule. I always, on those days, I will start on the on another corner of the board, and I will say, now today we're going to do this subject, and this subject, and this subject, and this subject, so that the students really are informed as to what we're doing. And also, posted assignments or a student assignment book. And some teachers really prefer the student assignment book because those assignment books go home with the students. I have mine just on one corner of the board, where I always, after the class, I always attempt to post what that new assignment is right then, so that any time of the day they can look up there and find out what the assignment was. There's something else that I've used in my class that I borrowed from another curriculum, and this is a goal chart. What I do with this is just made with an Excel spreadsheet, very simple to make. I do these at the beginning of the year, and I cut out pretty much this size. And then I use a piece of contact paper that is about 2 inches bigger, so there's an inch border all the way around. And I adhere that right to the left top corner of the desk. And then I give every student an overhead projector marker. And this one is just for their goal chart. And then on, and the way this works on, okay, first thing on Monday morning after devotions is class, we're going to have a math test on Tuesday. So everybody goes to Tuesday and puts a T in there, and we know that we're going to have a math test on Tuesday. We're going to have a social studies test on Friday, and oh, I'm sorry, and there will be a science test on Thursday. And so anything of that nature, they know at the beginning of the week, and obviously I need to schedule, and I always schedule out a week at a time. For if you're a first-year teacher, that might be difficult at the beginning of the year, especially because you're going to be feeling your way through this. You're going to be finding how things work and so on. But for me, as a veteran, I really do not want to go back to scheduling day by day. I schedule a week at a time, and that way I am not caught by surprise as to what's coming up in the near future and so on and so forth. But then on Monday, the student has done their Bible memory. So they put an X in the box. And on Monday, they can only mark out Monday assignments. On Tuesday, they can only mark out two. So Monday morning, this student did their spelling book for this week's lesson, did their whole spelling lesson this weekend. And so on Monday morning, I will have students that come in, and the first thing they do before they start yakking to their friends is they'll mark their goal chart. And that, what is a goal? A goal is something, a visual, that something that's before you that you're working toward. And this I have went, and usually what I do at the beginning of the year, I just put the desks in rows, and then I have the students sit where their books are on the first day of school. And then I don't put anything on, fasten anything to the desk at that point, because rather than changing, raising this desk and lowering this desk, I have them swap desks. But so sometimes it takes 3 or 4 days before these get on the desks. And my sixth graders, which have been with me the previous year, are begging for them by that time, because they say, that lets me know exactly what I have to do and what I don't have to do, what I'm done with, and so on and so forth. And I should just mention, these are not things that I think you ought to go, that I'm not telling you to go do these. I'm telling you to borrow whatever you can, utilize, change it, modify, anything you can do to help you. And that's all of this workshop is. So on Monday, they are only allowed to mark Monday's boxes. Now, so they took some homework home. On Tuesday, when they come back, they're not allowed. This is just my rule, but they're not allowed to go back and mark off Monday. Now, there's a reason for that. Parent-teachers meeting. And it also gives me a really good feel of what's happening. Because I had a parent-teachers meeting, I had parents come to me just this past year and say, well, the body language said it all. I said, my daughter has 3 hours of homework every night. Well, first of all, I couldn't see how, that's what I was told. 3 hours of homework every night. She has no time to do anything else. She can't help around the house. She can't do this, can't do that. And first of all, by looking at this evenings, I could not see where she could come up with 3 hours of homework. And I said, why don't we walk around the classroom? And those parents got to see their daughter's goal chart and everybody else's. And they were all given the same assignment. And after that, they had nothing to say. I didn't have to justify myself. But I felt like the goal chart spoke for itself. And after that, I think they detected that probably their daughter is not utilizing her time wisely, because some things changed after that. That's been a really helpful one. Oh, this, a sponge and paper towels every Friday evening or Monday morning, and we're good to go again. So these stay on their desks the whole year long. I do not give all of my students a homework slip. But unfortunately, like I was telling you, the little guy that I had this past 2 years, he could never remember what was to be done at home or what he had to do. He would take his books home and he couldn't remember what there was to be done. And he couldn't remember what to take home. So I have, this past year, I had two students that took these. And again, any subject that he was not finished with, and we would look at this to figure out what wasn't done. What wasn't marked off on here needed to be put on here. Now, their oral reading, they only have oral reading once a week. And so this reading worksheet, let's say the reading worksheet was given to him on Tuesday. That reading worksheet is not due until next Tuesday. So if he had three assignments, including that worksheet, then we would write the worksheet in here, but we would not put a star beside it. The star was there to tell Mom that this needed to be done tonight. Now, if reading worksheet was the only thing he had to do, it got a star. Rather than drag it out for a week, then it got the star. And that what I got him to do is to fill out the worksheet or fill out this paper. And then I would have to do the stars. And he soon caught on. And he would do the stars. And he knew what was a reasonable amount of work. And the other thing is, so we only have reading worksheet tonight. That's the only thing. It's due in a week. But we're going away tonight. Oh, fine. I won't mark that. I won't star that. So there's some real variables that can work into this, and then the parent signature. And I also explained to both the son and the mom that he is to show this homework slip to you before you eat dinner. That way, next morning, when it's almost bus time, he says, "Oh, Mom!" No, that won't work. You need to... And obviously, it's going to be some of mom's responsibility too, to get this to say, now I need to see your paper, your homework slip, before we eat. So we know what's going on this evening, what, how much time you have for play, and how much time you need for homework. If they went to a viewing, I'd give lots of grace, or lots of mercy, I should say. I would. He has already told me, or I've already been told, well, my cousins were at my house. And you know, there I say, well, how much time did it actually take you to do the work? And if, you know, well, did you have that much time? And I tell them, you know, I also have restrictions. Maybe there are evenings when we need to go shopping, and I still need to do my homework. That's the world I live in, and that's the world you live in. And so, I have heard so many excuses. I heard the best one probably 3 or 4 years ago. My aunt lost my homework. Now, this was a girl that had moved into the community, and I thought, I chuckled a bit, and I said, your aunt lost your homework. I said, well, what was your aunt doing with it? And she said, we were playing school. I said, oh, really? I said, how old is your aunt? And her aunt was younger than she was. So then the answer made a little bit of sense. But if there's a good reason for Susie not to be done with her homework, have Mom call. And I'm not here to make it difficult for them, but I have heard every excuse under the sun. And they don't always carry a whole lot of weight. Now, if you're ready for just a touch of humor, when the students are working on the research paper, I have this little slip that I use occasionally, but only seldom. There's a room for the date, dear so-and-so, the parent's name. Concerning this research paper, this is a gentle message informing you that your son or daughter needs to do a little more reading and note-taking at home tonight. Thank you. And the parents have to sign that. Well, I got one back one time, and the mom told me later that her son was out playing after he had brought home a note like this. And the mom went out and said, Junior, you have to come back in here and start working on that research paper. And he said, Mom, it's a gentle message. No, the parent's signature goes on there. Yes, that the parents have seen it. In my classroom, study is a daily part of our day. It's part of the routine. When students are done with their work, have you studied your Bible memory? You know, they don't have anything to do, or they're picking up a library book. Have you studied your Bible memory? No. Well, if you haven't said this week's passage yet, and my students can come up anytime after phys ed, and say their Bible memory. And what they do is I just to make it easier for them, I've run off copies of the Bible passage on a piece of paper, and they keep it in their folders. And they do this. Just raise that, and it's a half a sheet, so I always know what it is. That way, and I told them, I will take all other questions before I take Bible memory, because Bible memory is not something that has to be done today. So if Susie has a math question, Joe wants to say Bible memory, even if Joe had his hand up first, I'll take Susie's math question. But this way, it avoids me going back there and finding out they want to say Bible memory, then we both trot up to my desk, and then they say their Bible memory. This way, they just do this, and I just tell them to come up, and they say their Bible memory at my desk. So if you haven't said your Bible memory, and you're reading a library book, the book has to go away, and you have to say you have to study. You don't have to say it. You have to study your Bible memory. Do you have a social studies worksheet? If you do, it has to be studied today. As soon as you have one science lesson, it needs to be studied today. If we are working with math decimal equivalents, and you haven't studied those, you need to study those before you read, or before you do something fun. I've had the situation where students just couldn't ever remember to study. I made a little study chart for them. It said, in the last 24 hours, I have studied, and I put down Bible memory, social studies, science. I'm not sure what's spelling on there or not. But just contact that on their desk, and It works. Also, papers due in the morning must be completed on arrival at school. So English is approximately 10:30. We're going to have math class before that. After math class, I'm sorry, you are not going to quickly try to finish the English assignment that's due this morning. Because, first of all, the next one goes right with it. After an assignment is given, we always work on that new assignment immediately following it, while that information is fresh in your mind. At that point, you do not have the option of quickly trying to finish your English. Number one, you're probably cramming, so you aren't going to do a good job. Number two, how do we learn? We do not learn by the teacher doing examples on the board. That's the first step. Teacher solving math problems on the board with the class participation, that's the first step. But actual learning takes place when the student puts it into practice. So when they have seen me do examples on the board and they have done a couple practice problems in class and then they are working on their homework, I call it homework, it's the work, the assignment. That's when the actual learning is going to take place. And I want that actual learning to take place immediately after I have shown them examples. So that's the reason that everything that's due that morning needs to come in or needs to be done when you get there. And then encourage each day's work to be completed, even if not due until a later date. And this is one that I have really struggled with some parents seeing the value of this. Okay, reading assignment. Again, the oral reading is done once a week, and the reading worksheet is done once a week. And so maybe the instructions on here are a little bit complex. And I've spent the time to explain exactly what to do or what the instructions mean. And it is beneficial for the student to do it at that point. If they wait until next Wednesday to do it, or next almost a week later to do it, so often they forget so much. And I have, this is one, yeah, like I say, that I've kind of struggled with parents understanding the value of this. There's something else that I did not have on there that I wanted to do, and maybe I don't have this. Right here it is. I encourage my students, you might recognize this, it's from Rebecca English, and I love the course. But when I get the students to, when I assign something, and by the way, I don't use their curriculum guide. I move around, and I don't always take every page consecutively. Because of that, that causes a little bit of chaos at times. But even though we're not doing the top part today, we're only doing this part today of this page. On the board, I write down page 105. But I tell them, when I have assigned this, then you do that. And they know in a heartbeat that that has been assigned and that this is not. Now, maybe two-thirds of the way through this assignment, we are moving, it's lunchtime, and they don't have time to finish it. They come back later, oh no, they thought it was done. It's time to hand it in. And they thought it was done, and it's not. Well, when it's done, do that. And then they know that's been assigned and I'm done with it. Now, I'm not stringent on that. That's just a tip that I give them, but a lot of the students really use that one. And obviously, if you don't have a consumable book, you can't do that. But that has been a big help just in keeping students know if they're done or not. The other thing is, has that been graded? Well, in my classroom, I always know because that every activity gets a number wrong. And the other thing is, maybe I'll have a little bit of time. They're working on this, and so I'll walk around the classroom, and you can tell me to grade any problem here you want to grade, want me to grade, and I'll, as I'm circulating, and so I'll grade. You want to grade number one? Okay, I'll grade it. And they did well with it, so I'll just do that.
And I know that means that, that in English, that does not mean I need to go back and grade it. It's done. Or I will do that with it. Any kind of marking that I know is mine and I can utilize it. They don't want me to grade number two because they're not sure about something, but I can grade number three. And so that evening when I have the papers and I'm grading, I know that numbers one and three are already graded. So if you can use something of that nature, go ahead. Let's talk about your portion of the classroom, the desk. I maintain that desks should be neat. My students, mine. And unfortunately, mine does not always end up that way. But I try to, at least once a day, at the end of the day, to get things cleared and put away. And but on the other hand, I do have things that I need on my desk. I need tape dispensers. I have two of them. I have staples, paper clips that the students can access. And those are things that need to stay on my desk. When they go home, their desks are to be cleared. Timely arrival at school. This one, I think, is a big one in a teacher's being structured. I have seen teachers arrive at school after the buses have arrived. And I'm thinking, no. I remember the day that I had a dentist appointment early in the morning. And I got there after my students did. And it's just the wrong way to start the day. I don't know about you, but it seems every morning I have something that I either need to do or I surely can do with that extra minute or two that I have. And I'm wondering if a teacher does not get there in time. Number one, do you know what you're going to teach? On Monday morning when you go to class, on your way to school, do you know what you're going to be teaching in math that day? Do you know what method you're going to use to teach that concept? If you are clueless and you're getting there the time the students do, you're not prepared. You might be able to buffalo your way through with first and second graders. You get into junior high and it's not going to happen. And what's going to happen is you're going to end up wasting their time. And I have literally seen this happen where they took this book and started saying, well, we did this on Friday. Let's do this today. You have no clue. You're unprepared. And I don't mean to scold you, but the first job of a teacher is to be prepared. You must be prepared or you are going to be inefficient. That is a pet peeve of mine, as you might have detected. So make sure that you are at school on time. And I also think it's wise if you have an orderly filing system. And if you're a first-year teacher, I would encourage you, if you have a file drawer, go ahead and take that drawer, get some manila folders, and start labeling things as soon as you can start filing things into your drawer. Because these are things that you're going to... Field trip, bulletin board items, what you need for certain art projects, what you're going to do with math. So you made up a quiz for math. File it. Because those are things that even if you don't use it next year, those are ideas that you can modify and adapt to maybe a better thing than what you did the previous year. So set up a filing system. I wish I had a good file on all the bulletin boards I've done because I don't. And you, if you're a veteran, you know that the most difficult portion of a bulletin board is deciding what's going to go up there, not the actual putting it up there. Okay, require your work to be completed on time. This one is an interesting one. The first year that I taught, I was telling you about the year that I subbed for 6 weeks. And what happened was I came into class on a Monday morning. And if I recall correctly, there were two boys that were not finished with their math lesson. And in my ignorance, I did nothing about it. And I didn't even make them finish the lesson later on that day. I'm not sure. Things were really in a fog that first year. I had about 25 students, and there were some real problems in that class. Tuesday morning came along, and there were a few more students that weren't finished with their math lesson. And again, in my ignorance, I did nothing about it. Of course, everybody knew that. And Wednesday morning, there were a few more that weren't finished, and guess what I did? Nothing. And so Thursday morning came along, and a few more weren't finished. As a matter of fact, over half the class was not finished. Guess what I did? I did something. I said, we're not going to grade until everybody is finished with this lesson. And oh, were there groans. They thought they were on Easy Street. And I saw that we are getting nowhere. And I've just found that when everybody knows that every paper is expected to be done on time, it really eases up the whole atmosphere of the classroom. Because these students, you know that when they're not finished with their math lesson, there's a niggling in their brain that says, I might get in trouble for this. When everybody's done with their work on time, it just really eases things up. Require correct spelling. In my classroom, I've told them that, now, on a social studies or science test, no, you might not have everything spelled correctly. And I'm fine with that. What I need to do is be able to take your answer and sound it out phonetically, and it needs to say the correct answer. If it's off if I cannot sound it out and come up with that answer, then I will count it wrong. On daily work, you do not even need to ask me permission to go to the back shelf and to get the dictionary. The dictionaries are back there. There are plenty of them. And you say, well, I can't find it in the dictionary. Don't put the dictionary away, because I'm not going to tell you how to spell that word. I will come back to your desk, and I will help you find that word in the dictionary. I mean, after all, pneumatic does not start with an N. I will help you find, but you don't put the dictionary away. I will help you find, because I think this sets a pattern for help, for you realizing that you need to do something. You need to put forth effort first, and then I will help. But it's not my effort, it's your effort. And misspelled words, count off 1%. And I do that really easily, because any misspelled word gets a circle. And when we do a number wrong at the top of the page, it's not uncommon to come up with -3, -2. That means there were 3 wrong answers and 2 misspellings. And so if 3 wrong is an 88, then they take off the 2 misspellings and their score is an 86. And we had a new principal this year, high school, and he made the observation one day after school among us teachers. He said, you know, it really is interesting, some of the spelling that I'm getting on these high schoolers work. And one of the other high school teachers made this astute observation. She said, you will get what you allow. You will get what you allow. If you allow, now there are some people in that high school that will go look up a word even if it's not required. But there are others that if I can get by without losing any points on this assignment and write spelling in any way I please, I'll do it. Our first grade teacher does that. She does not require every word to be spelled correctly, but the words they should know, she requires. They don't know how to use dictionaries yet. So I'm saying be reasonable and obviously work with your age group.
How do you answer parents who say, I don't know about this history grade. It's more a spelling grade than a history grade. Sometimes parents have walked about that kind of grading because I don't really know if they know their history or not. They might just be a poor speller.
And that's true. Number one, are they getting their grade out of the book? Are they getting their answers out of the book?
Yeah, those would have been getting their answers. Yeah, they should have been able to find the word.
It's right in there. And I'm not saying I want you to copy word for word out of the book.
But I also ask the question, do we only pray on Sunday? Do we only count spelling on spelling books? Or do we attempt to be consistent throughout? I tell the students that they always need to have their supplies at school. In other words, your blue pen doesn't go home. If you have an assignment that needs to be written in ink, I'm sure you have a pen at home. Your blue pen stays at school because tomorrow you might need it, and if you take it home, unfortunately, you forget it. Have adequate folder space. I tell my students every year that you need 3 folders, 6 pockets for what I need in my classroom. And when you have those pockets, then you have enough information or enough spots to hold the papers you have. And there are no loose papers in your desk. That loose paper either needs to be put in a book until it's graded, or into a folder, or in the trash can, or it goes home. But there's a place for that paper. Don't make a fan out of it in the front of your book, in the front of your desk. Bookmarks. Whatever you use. I love bookmarks. One of the first things we do in the school year is make bookmarks. Every hardcover book has a bookmark in it. And if you lose your bookmark, fine. I'll give you construction paper. You make another one. But utilize bookmarks because it saves so much time. Student pulls the book out of the desk, and they know right where we were, where we've left off, and where we're going next. Use lists. Almost every day at the end of phys ed, after phys ed, we have a short period at the end of the day yet of class time, and I make a list of what we need to do that day. That way the students know what's coming, and often they'll say, you forgot this. And we'll add that to the list. And I've become goal-oriented. I'm aware of that. But as we finish something, we'll erase it, and we can see exactly what we have left to do. Require memorization of frequently used items. And the big one that I use in sixth grade is decimals. 1/8 is 0.125. And I am sure that I am saving them time, because if every time that they needed to use 1/8 and had to divide it, take 1 and divide it by 8 and divide it out to 0.125, it would take them so much more time than if they just memorized them. That's what we do with flashcards, with multiplication tables. We do that instead of, we memorize that 8 times 5 is 40 instead of adding 8 plus 8 plus 8 plus 8 plus 8. It's just a big time saver. And there are so many verb lists. That's a huge one. Those are just things that really need to be memorized, because you will actually do your students a favor in the long run. Listening quizzes, and I'm sorry, I must have talked too slowly, but this is something that at the beginning of the year I often use. And this, by the way, is out of a Black Line Master reproducible book to be meant to be used in classrooms. And there are some instructions with this. I make the students lay their paper down. Lay the pencils down, and they have this paper, and I read instructions. And the instructions for this paper are like this, and I only read it once. Marcy had a crazy dream last night. Her brother joined the circus so he could live in a big tent. A whale somehow got in the doghouse and blew off the roof, and hundreds of bees took over the bird nest in her tree. Draw lines to match up the pictures on the left with the homes on the right, and then I hit a tap bell. And at that point, they're allowed to pick up the pencil and draw the lines. Before that, they're only allowed to listen, not make any marks on the paper. And this is for second and third grade. Sometimes students struggle, and there are more difficult ones in here also, but sometimes students struggle, but it really helps them to tune in, am I listening? Because listening is a big factor. There's one here that I really want to talk about. Require a reasonable use of their time. I had a student who just he would spend hours doing his work, and another teacher made him stay after school.
And sometimes he'd be there till 6 o'clock. Till his work was done. He could just piddle. And when he came into my classroom, I told him, I said, you know, I really like my students. But come 3:30, I need a break. So what we're going to do is if you don't get enough work done today, and I tried to be very reasonable with him. If you don't get enough work done today, it's going to go home for homework, and you will be here at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. Now, this was after I had tried quite a number of other things. He was not a morning person. He was at school, by 8:05. And he had certain things that he could start on for that day so that come 3:30, he could go home with everybody else. And you know, come 3:30, and he still wasn't done. He still wasn't nearly done. Fine, it's homework, and you'll be here at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning again. And we did that for almost a week until he saw that, you know, there is a way that I could do this. And almost overnight, he made some drastic changes because he did not want to come to school early the next morning. Then I'm going to say this also. Don't be so structured in your classroom that your students bite their nails and relax. Give them some freedom. But I'm going to tell you that I believe, in conclusion, that sometimes characteristics, the traits, the patterns we teach are more important than the academic material that we're teaching. There's going to come a day when they're not going to be doing any more English worksheets. But the persistence that they learned in finding an answer to do those worksheets is a persistence they're going to need for the rest of their life. Does anybody have any questions or any comments, anything you'd like to share yet before we dismiss?
One thing you said, a bulletin board, take a picture of it.
No. That is something that I had done, and consequently, I guess I would have a cell phone at school, but I never take my camera to school. But that is a really good one because that doesn't take much room in a file. There's another thing that I do, which I was going to share with a later workshop, but I will just mention it here quickly for what it's worth. I buy poster board, and I have a cabinet that poster board, the shelves are big enough to accommodate a piece of poster board. So I use an overhead projector and draw on the poster board. And if the poster board's not big enough, you put two of them together at a convenient place in the picture. And I use chalk. I rub my chalk. I can shade it. I experiment a lot with a former co-teacher. I spray it with a clear lacquer. Cut it out. And they all fit in that cabinet because they're all made out of poster board. And even though I have gobs of those pictures, no captions, but I often come up with a new caption anyway, because if I use something, sometimes I feel like I'm not being fresh if I just use everything, just a totally canned bulletin board. So often I'll come up with a new caption, same picture. And so often that saves a lot of time on a bulletin board. If you spray them with a clear lacquer, the chalk won't smear. Our school has bought a couple totes and clear plastic ones. And so any teacher that buys a border buys it with school money, and it goes in that afterwards. And if it's in there, you as a teacher can use it. And you put it back. And so we share borders all the time. Go back and enjoy life with your class.